The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Bonusly, a fun personal recognition and rewards program that enriches company culture and improves employee engagement. Used by thousands of companies, Bonusly integrates with popular collaboration tools like Slack and Zapier, as well as HR software like ADP and Bamboo HR. Bonusly is proudly made right here in Boulder, Colorado. Learn more about employee recognition and try Bonusly free for 2 months at bonus.ly/BoulderTech. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. Our guest for episode number 27 is Kim White, a participant in Watson Institute's Semester Incubator in Boulder and co-founder of Zimbo Ties, a Zimbabwe-based startup making bow ties from recycled fabrics. Proceeds from sales go towards putting Zimbabwean kids through school. Kim and I touch on a number of things, such as his inspiration for creating a business with a social impact, Kim's experience in Boulder and at the Watson Institute, the concept of design thinking, and what he's gained from working with Zimbabwean children. All of that and more as the Boulder Tech Podcast speaks with Kim White. Why Boulder? What brings you to Boulder?
So I got a friend from high school who grew up with me in Zimbabwe, and he's living in Boulder. So I heard back, oh, it's a cool place to live. So I was kind of Googling opportunities in the States because I've been wanting to join, like either do an internship or do kind of an incubator outside of Zimbabwe. So I was like, let me check out Boulder, and the Watson Institute popped up on a Google search, I think. Yeah, that's what got me here.
So you're attending the Watson Institute?
Yeah, yeah.
What's your background?
I studied engineering as my undergrad, and I worked for a few years for a biomedical engineering firm as one of their design engineers. And I then did a master's in product design. Yeah, then kind of like while I was doing my master's, went into trying to start up a business.
And your business is Zimbo Ties?
Yeah, that's it.
And why bow ties?
It's interesting, like coming from a biomedical engineering background is like completely different. But I think working in that kind of world and seeing that like you can use design and products to like change people's lives and like change the world around you. I guess I wanted to start my own company, and like going home to Zimbabwe, I wasn't going to start, like I didn't have the resources to start some sort of biomedical company, but from what I could see, like there were a lot of tailors there who are like super talented, and there was all this incredible fabric that they were using, and they were just throwing away the offcuts from the clothes they were making. So I was like, okay, I knew I was going to the UK to do my master's, and I wanted like some sort of to make something small that I could take with me to sell. And I'd worn bow ties before, so they're kind of like a fun conversation starter, I guess. Like you wear a bow tie and it's kind of like you'll get a remark. So it just seemed like something that would be fun and get people speaking. Yeah.
So you started the company basically to put yourself through school. Is that correct? Or to earn some money while you were at school?
I wish I'd earn some money. Yeah. Well, I think that was maybe the initial thing. I was like, I'm going to the UK. Let me make something like from Africa or from Zimbabwe that can make some money, like kind of pocket money. And then I think I very quickly realized, yeah, it's not going to be so easy. Yeah, starting out. But yeah, then it kind of like progressed into actually building a brand and like learning about starting up a business.
And you started this business with your mother?
Yeah, that's right.
What is her role in the business?
So she's been making clothes and all sorts of stuff for years. I mean, as long as I've been alive. Growing up, we were often involved in sports teams. So she would kind of like help coordinate getting the sports kit made with sort of local tailors and local manufacturers. So she's got a lot of experience there working with people, tailors and stuff in Zimbabwe. So she's pretty much on the ground in Zimbabwe. She lives there with a lot of my other family. And so she works with the tailors to get stuff made, coordinate, sending them to shops in Zimbabwe across to the States. And she also has been helping find some of the kids that we've been supporting.
So talk about that a little bit. You started out originally just, maybe I can make some money selling bow ties, right? And there wasn't really a social benefit aspect to it at that point. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I think starting out, I was like, I've often like thought of starting a business and like getting these crazy ideas. And I was like, okay, let me just do it now and make it happen. But even then, I think my passion lies with design and product design. So there were a lot of aspects I realized that I was going to have to learn, like accounting and stuff like that, that just didn't appeal to me. And I was like, if it's just for my own personal wealth, I'm just going to lose motivation. So like by making it something bigger than myself, I figured like, okay, that'll kind of motivate me and drive me to actually do the stuff that I don't want to do. And yeah, kids are kind of just like the obvious thing for me to kind of like pay it forward almost.
And talk a little bit more about that. Where does that come from? Was there something that happened to you in your childhood? I'm just curious why, I don't know, you know, you want to start a company, I'm selling this product, bow ties or really whatever, and I want to do it because I want to be successful and make money. But then you realize that's not enough in a way. And where does that come from?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. I think like along the way, I've had a lot of people help me out and it's kind of really amazed me. Like, wow, that person like took the time to help me out. And even if it's just encouragement or a bit of money here and there, like that really meant a lot to me. And I have, like, I won a scholarship to go study in the UK to do my master's. And yeah, that's like a really big thing. And so that, and I've been involved in a few mentoring programs where I've been mentored in school and I've had to mentor sort of my peers also. And it's just like, I almost get out as much of it as like they do. So I think, yeah, that's been really, really good. That kind of pay it forward thing is like really a positive way to live.
So you had that pay it for it attitude, for lack of a better term. And that's what you decided was maybe the missing ingredient in the motivation for Zim bow ties, that just selling bow ties wasn't enough. You decided there should be a social benefit to it.
Yeah.
And so talk about that. What is the social benefit? How does Zim bow ties work really?
So the way it works is every bow tie we sell pays for 1 week of schooling for a kid in Zimbabwe. So we try to find kids who display some kind of creative talent. And the idea being, like, instead of coming from a place of, oh, we've got more money than you, let us help you out kind of thing, like almost projecting, oh, you're poor. It's like, what have you got to work with? You've got these amazing talents. Go develop those talents. Go develop those creative skills. So we really want to inspire these kids. So we award them, we handpick them. Like, we've had a design thinking workshop where we handpicked some kids and there was like an art competition where we saw some talented kids. And really like calling them out for the stuff they're already doing in hopes that we'll motivate them to carry on developing those skills.
And how do you identify these talented kids?
So yeah, like I mentioned, we had a design thinking workshop and I ran that workshop the last time I was in Zimbabwe, and you would just see there are just some kids who kind of stand out. Like the one kid, for example, we were brainstorming ideas to help blind people in our community, and this kid, his like skills of empathy were amazing. He could just like the way he put himself in the shoes of a blind person and like tried to think how life might feel for them, and that like that's just an incredible skill to have. And so we called him out for that. We said like, that's great, like keep on working with that and finding ways to see things from other people's point of view. So things like that, and yeah, like with an art competition, also like just kids who are breaking the rules a bit and are exploring new ways of doing things.
And how old are these kids?
So it's an age range of about 10 to 16 at the moment, the kids we've we've got, yeah.
Design thinking, you put on a design thinking workshop.
Yeah.
What is design thinking?
So design thinking is kind of, I think it was like really pushed forward by IDEO in California and also the D School at Stanford. And it's kind of like this set of actually quite simple ways of structuring your thinking. And the idea being to like identify problems and move from like identifying problems to ways of solving those problems, often in like in a product design setting, but it can be for like designing services, and it can be applied in a lot of different areas. So yeah, it's this like process of getting from like finding a problem to coming up with solutions and developing like the right solution for that problem.
And is that something you learned about in school or?
So I picked it up, I guess, like coming out of my undergrad, there was a product design aspect into it. So it kind of just came up onto my radar. And then in my master's, like we did it. I kind of like actually focused on like, here's this kind of toolkit, but it's very accessible. Like you don't have to do a master's in product design to like use some of these tools. And that's why we could do it with kids in junior school, high school, and like actually teach them these skills, these like ways of thinking that like get you out of your head and gives you some structure to your thinking to solve problems.
And their response to this idea of design thinking was very positive. They grabbed right onto it.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Like it was really good. And it was interesting to see how accessible it was for them, because I hadn't taught it to kids before. So it was really interesting to see how they picked up on it.
So you applied for a scholarship to Watson Institute, and you got that scholarship.
Yeah.
You ran a GoFundMe to fill out the rest of the expense involved with coming here. And how long have you been in Boulder now?
So I got here, I think it was early September. Yeah.
And what has Watson Institute, how has that helped you further your efforts with Zimbo Ties?
Watson's been great. It's like a school, but you're also like applying what you learn to an actual business. So I'm applying it to Zimbo Ties. So you're getting these skills in class that it's like, it's not about a final exam. It's about applying it to your business. And it's a really great kind of, I guess, education model, because it's kind of, you tailor it to your own needs. So yeah, the curriculum aspect has been great. They've paired us up with mentors. So these are people who have started their own businesses or are running their own businesses in Boulder. So it's been really great to have them kind of mentoring you and connecting you with people around Boulder. And Boulder is, it's an amazing, amazing place. Like just great people. And this kind of, I guess, because it's so entrepreneurial, there's so many people who are able to pick up, like understand what you're doing straight away and give you like a different perspective or feedback on it. And that's just been, it's been a really great environment to be in.
So who's your mentor?
So I've got two mentors. One is Mary Ellen, who runs or started Fresh Produce. It's a clothing company. They've got a shop on Pearl Street, and around the country they've got stores. So that's been fantastic. Someone who's actually started their own clothing line. And Arnie Jacobson, who is a marketing guru. Like I've actually had other people be like, oh yeah, Arnie, like it's amazing that stuff he's done, he's a legend kind of thing. So he's been really great to kind of bounce ideas off and like just get his spin on like how to like really frame what we're doing in a way that like captures people's imagination.
And how has, well, first I'm curious, how many fellow classmates do you have?
So there are, I think, 27 of us, and from like 20 different countries around the world. So a super diverse group of people,
And, well, that'll just open up a whole other line of questioning for me. But so all 27 of these students all have their own businesses happening right now?
Yeah. So they're all trying to start. Like, it's a wide range of where people are at. Some people are kind of like still exploring, like, what can I work on? They've got kind of like a why, like, why am I doing this? But haven't figured out exactly how to translate that into a business. And then there are other people who are kind of like further along selling stuff online or like doing workshops, offering services and stuff. So it's interesting. It's really interesting.
That's it surprised me when you said that you have classmates from 20 different countries.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you've heard or maybe noticed that Boulder isn't really like diversity is not a big thing here.
Yeah. So like
it isn't.
Yeah. There's been a few comments there like this is probably the most diverse room in Boulder.
Right.
Yeah.
And how have you found Boulder?
It's been good. In ways, it's very similar to the town I grew up in, like just like sort of similar size population, about 100,000, mountains all around, like really beautiful scenery and like hiking places all around, outdoorsy. So that's been cool. And man, like I keep on, it's like so nerdy, but I just keep on saying like every time, well, when I got here, like I was like, Boulder seems like a cool place. And then I went to the public library and I was like, I love Boulder. It's just great. Yeah. Like that's the kind of like that library and the creek running through it. It's like the center of the town for me.
Is it the setting of the library? I mean, it is in a really pretty sweet spot. Or is it the library? Like if the library were in some boring building on the east, you know, in a non-scenic place, would you still be into the library?
Probably a bit of both, but like the resources, the library is a gold mine, man. Like if you've got enough time and you have enough kind of income to keep you alive, like you can learn anything. The resources there is just so much. It's a great thing to tap into and just a great space. Also, like there's so many things happening there. Yeah.
It's interesting to hear you bring that up because I just saw, I was flipping through a magazine or something or a website the other day and I saw a headline that said that, you know, millennials and, you know, the younger generation, the 20-somethings are really into public libraries.
Really?
and just yesterday at the office, I was talking to a guy. We were talking about music and jazz. And I said, oh, you should check out, if you're interested in getting more into jazz, I recommend Miles Davis's autobiography. And I saw him immediately bring up the Boulder Public Library website to see if they had it. And now, you know, so now it's like... All right.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, and their online resources also are fantastic. Yeah, it's really cool.
That's pretty cool. And this is a total aside. I was talking to someone else about this, and they said, oh, yeah, well, you know, between streaming and everything, like a younger generation doesn't have the same attachment around ownership of things. Like you don't need to buy the book or own the CD.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I've moved around... I've basically been in 4 countries in the last 2 or 3 years. And like, I just kind of like avoid getting stuff. And like, if it can be digital and I don't have to pay for it, just rent it, I'm cool with that. Yeah.
So going back to Boulder and Zimbo Ties, how is it? You've been introduced to a bit to the entrepreneurial community here. And there certainly is a lot going on in Boulder. How has Zimbo Ties been received? Have you had much of an impact or... sold many bow ties?
The Boulder Rotary Club has been amazing. And then the last couple of weeks, they got me to go there and like give a pitch about what we're doing and like set up a little stall there. And yeah, like super supportive, really generous. I haven't been to any of the local markets here, but at the end of the year, we've got a kind of Watson Summit where hopefully I'll be able to sell some of the products that we've got there. And people have been like giving really good feedback. I mean, like Boulder's a very outdoorsy, people are kind of like dressed very casually, but still like a lot of people are like, okay, this product is great. I can definitely see it working. So that's been really good getting that feedback from people. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm not really a tie guy, but I'm like, that's a nice little splash of color right there.
Awesome.
So you mentioned earlier that part of your thinking behind adding this social benefit aspect to Zimbo Ties was because you had received a lot of support growing up.
Yeah.
Mentored and been mentored, and you wanted to pay it forward a little bit.
Yeah.
And a big part of the Boulder tech entrepreneurial startup community is this attitude of give first. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, it's amazing.
What's your experience of that?
I mean, every person I've asked for a meeting pretty much has been like, sure thing, or like has connected me to someone else. So it's definitely there. And yeah, I think this, oh man, just, I'm taking it for granted now, but I think being out of this bubble is going to be interesting, where people don't necessarily get what you're doing, or like aren't so quick to give. And yeah, it's a really valuable thing. I read, there's a book by Adam Grant called Givers and Takers, and it's basically about that attitude of giving first and how valuable it is. And like, to come to a place where like that's people's mantra, it's amazing. It's really amazing to experience that. Yeah. And I guess that that fact that people are, it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, where it's like everyone says this is what happens, so people like have to live up to that. I think it's a great, it's like what a great thing to have. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Does seem to be a unique thing. I've spoken to pretty much everyone that I've interviewed for this podcast. I've spoken to about that, and everyone's got their own take on it. But it's really refreshing to know that that's almost the thing that Boulder's tech community is known for. Not just the really cool things that are, you know, happening here, but but that particular aspect of it. Is this your first time in the U.S.?
Yeah.
And have you been anywhere besides Boulder yet?
So I was in New Mexico kind of for it was a month or two, but not really, just like visiting friends, so, and like exploring New Mexico a bit. So yeah, it was a different world. It's crazy how like you're, from what I can see, you're different states or like different countries. It's
it's pretty amazing. And and you know, hopefully you'll have a chance to explore some of the rest of the country. There's a lot to explore, as you know, and a lot of different attitudes out there, as you've probably started to pick up on as well. In one of your newsletters, you describe the progress you've made with Zimbo Ties. But then you sort of confess that we really don't know what we're doing and we need support from others. And I think this is specifically, I think in general, it's still in general, but specifically that time you're talking about the crowdfunding to pay for the rest of your scholarship to get you here. But still, that's a big thing to say, is just like, we're just day by day, we're trying to push it forward, and we don't really know really what we're doing, and we need your help. How long did it take you to get from realizing that to stating it publicly? and how did that feel to do that? And how's the response been?
That running a crowdfunding thing was one of the most difficult decisions I've had to make. And I've like given a lot of thought, because a lot of people said, oh, crowdfunding is so like suited to what you're doing. But like, as much help as I've received over the years, I'm still have this idea that I can do it on my own. Like, I need to be independent. And you realize like, just times you just can't, like, it's just, you need other people's help. So yeah, to kind of admit that you're like maybe not able to do it on your own is a big thing. And also, the, it maybe goes against this attitude of fake it till you make it. And to kind of be honest sometimes. Like, I guess times you do have to say like, this is what I'm doing, and be fairly confident in it, and at least be honest afterwards when it doesn't work. Because if you're saying, no, I'm not so sure this is going to work, I don't know if people are going to follow you. But there are times where I guess you just have to say, like, I can't go any further without you guys. And yeah, I mean, it was amazing to successfully crowdfund something. It was just, you feel like really blessed, I guess, that people are like prepared to believe in you and back what you're doing with like with their money and just their encouragement and support.
And did it feel, when you finally were like, all right, I need this help, I need to announce that I need help.
Yeah.
How did that feel?
So, like, the fact that I got the funding was like, oh, that wasn't so bad. But still, if I had to do it again, it would still be difficult. And I still feel like I need to like live up to kind of almost like repay or like do something good just to prove that I deserve that support. So yeah, it's interesting.
So it kind of holds your feet to the fire in a way.
Feet to the fire.
Oh, that's an American.
Okay.
Holding your feet to the fire, accountability.
Okay, yeah. And it's actually great to have. Like it's like I'm committing to this thing now. Before you're kind of, I don't know if it was probably a big part of it was the crowdfunding. It was like, okay, I'm doing this now. It's out there. Like before you kind of, I was maybe like keeping it on the low sometimes, but now it's like, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm working on.
So it allowed you to really step into it.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And how are the children responding to this? You did this workshop.
Yeah.
You've done at least one workshop with some kids talking about design thinking.
Yeah.
And what is working with kids in Zimbabwe taught you?
It was interesting. The design workshop I ran, like what I really loved about doing that was like all the kids were getting something out of it. So we weren't just like singling out some kids. So that was kind of, I enjoyed that. And at the end of the workshop, I just did like a one page printout for the kids to like have a summary of what we had done. And I just gave it to the teacher and I said, like, can you just give this to all the kids? And he's like, no, you need to hand it out to them because like getting a handout like that was like something special for the kids. And I was just blown away. I was like, that's like, I didn't even think twice about that. Just how like just a little thing like that meant so much to the kids. It just kind of, you really appreciate how much you've got. Like I've been super lucky in life. And yeah, kind of putting that in perspective is kind of cool. I mean, the kids we awarded the scholarships to, and I don't think I've ever seen smiles so big in my life. And a few weeks later, I received letters from them that were just incredible. Like, I'm trying to inspire these kids, and they're inspiring me, pretty much. So it was amazing. And then we recently gave out some more scholarships after an art competition. We selected some kids, and my mother handed those out. And she went to the school, and they had the headmaster, the art teacher, the sort of class teacher, the head boy, and there was singing and dancing, and it meant so much. So that, I mean, that for me, just that kind of positive effect, and hopefully it ripples out. That's what I wanted to achieve, and so far so good, yeah.
Your time at Watson Institute, I take it, is coming to a close. It's a 4-month program.
Pretty quick.
And then what?
Good question. I'm trying to figure that out. So I think a big part of what we're trying to do now is kind of make these really awesome products in Zimbabwe that people want to buy around the world. And just being able to tap into a world market, it just gives us, hopefully, a bigger chance of success. So for me, being able to like kind of be that bridge between, for now, let's say America and Zimbabwe, is quite important. So I'd like to find ways to sort of develop the business in America, like maybe meet retailers or kind of basically promote what we're doing in the States or in Europe. We'll see. I'm on a Zimbabwean passport, so. So the visa issue is a tricky one, but I think I'd love to kind of be outside the country developing and go back when I need to. Yeah.
Are there issues for Zimbabweans getting into the US?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I think I pulled aside it at the airport. I don't know if I just looked dodgy or but I mean, I got a year-long visa to visit here, so that'll expire in like 6 months, and I can only be here for 6 months. So I'm going to have to leave at the end of the year and go home or go to another country. It's not like passports and visas are not a fun thing if you don't come from a well-off country.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you talk about any of the differences that you've experienced between Zimbabwe and, you know, or Mutare, your hometown, and Boulder? You talked about how geographically they're similar,
yeah,
and they're both beautiful scenically.
Yeah, it's...
But I imagine the cultures are probably a little different.
Yeah, it's a different world. Like, I guess Zimbabwe's been through some tough times. So our city is basically, I guess the backbone of it was agriculture, maybe some mining. And that's kind of fallen apart in Zimbabwe due to various reasons, which I don't want to dive into so too much. But yeah, there's a lot of building up that needs to happen in our community, and in our town. I mean, it's hard to compare them at all.
Are there any other businesses back in your hometown or in Zimbabwe in general that are sort of following the same path as you, trying to export the culture a little bit as a way to give back to your fellow country people?
Yeah, so actually one business in Mutare is Gogo Olive, and it's like... Yeah, they're inspirational to me. They've been going for about 10 years now. And a friend started that. She's from Scotland, and she works with mainly ladies in town that knit these little creatures or animals, sort of. They've got like a Zimbabwe range and a Scottish range now. But it's these really kind of like cartoonish animals. So they're selling them around the world, and they actually work with quite a lot of ladies in prison. And when those ladies come out of prison, they have a job, or they sometimes employ them to make the gogo olive. They call them shamwaris, which is like a Shona word for friend. So yeah, they've done so well, and it's like that's been a real inspiration for me to do something in my own town too. So.
And do they know you? Have you talked to them?
Yeah. Julie, who started it, is a good friend.
What advice would you give to someone who's looking to start up their own company, perhaps with a social benefit aspect? What's the first step or first couple of steps?
Definitely just start. Yeah, just get speaking to people. And I think the worst thing to do is try develop an idea in like isolation and spend all your time building up the perfect idea, because there's good chance it's not going to work. And like the success of it is going to depend on like people connecting you to the right people, or like giving you feedback on your idea and believing in your idea. And like the sooner you talk to people, the better for helping develop that idea. Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to add about anything?
Wow. One of the things with just starting, it was like in the first month that we came up with the idea, we just made some prototypes. I mean, we didn't even have buckle, because we do like these pre-tied bow ties that have kind of a clip on the back. And we hadn't even found clips yet, I think. Or we hadn't even attached them to our prototypes. And we had a photo shoot with people wearing these, but they were kind of like tied behind their necks. Not great quality, but it's like, let's just share this idea and like get some good pictures and kind of just start getting feedback from people. And that was really good to like put the idea out in the world. It's a good first step. Yeah.
And maybe the biggest,
yeah,
the scariest anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Where can people find out about and perhaps even purchase Zimbo Ties?
Awesome. So we're on Instagram at Zimbo Ties, and Facebook at Zimbo Ties, a little bit of Twitter at Zimbo Ties, and we have an online store, ZimboTies.com.
All right.
Yeah.
Kim White from Zimbo Ties, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joel.
That was Kim White,
co-founder of Zimbo Ties and a student at Boulder's Watson Institute. Learn more at zimboties.com and follow Kim on Twitter at zimboties. The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Bonusly, a fun personal recognition and rewards program that enriches company culture and improves employee engagement. Learn more and try Bonusly for free at bonus.ly/BoulderTech. The Boulder Tech Podcast is also made possible in part by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for the Boulder Tech Podcast HQ, and to KGNU Community Radio for studio usage. Our intro music is by Echo Deck. Hear more at echodeck.com. That's ECCODEK. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, and comments are welcome. Reach me at joel@conduitmusic.co. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.